It's time now for our Ask an Expert segment. Each weekday at this time on KCBS, we're giving you direct access to top experts in various fields related to the pandemic. Today, we'll double back and take a look at where testing stands. So much conversation these days about the vaccine distribution rollout. That's important, but so too is testing. To answer your questions, I'm joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Caroline Savello, Chief Commercial Officer for Color. It's a Bay Area health company that have been running many of the COVID-19 testing sites in the region. Caroline, welcome back. How have you been?
I've been good. Thanks so much for having me back, Stan. Appreciate it.
I bet you've been busy.
There's been a lot going on.
can you kind of fill us in on where things stand now in terms of our capacity to test? And for those who haven't heard the story of how Color got into this, walk us through your company's history regarding COVID-19 testing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's been so many improvements in testing access over the past many months. And a lot of that is, through the leadership of local public health departments, but also like technology and, laboratory companies like ours who have been really investing in building a lot more capacity and easier access models for patients. So I think we're in much better shape than we were, obviously, at the outset of things last year. In terms of how we got started, we had been in, we were founded 7 years ago, and we've always been in the business of providing large-scale population healthcare delivery services and testing services. We work with everything from the NIH to companies to unions. And when COVID happened, we just saw that we could help and really mobilize the company to try and offer, testing access right here in the Bay Area, and it's expanded quite a bit since then.
It seems like the moment we're in right now has some echoes of the early days of testing, right? A little maybe disorganized, a little underpowered. Anything that was learned in the early days of trying to roll out testing sites that might be applicable to the vaccination situation?
Yeah, this is really top of mind for us. There's so much of it that feels exactly like last March and April. We're seeing, some of the learnings coming through, but some of the same things happening as did a year ago. People, and a lot of this is governments and things like that, but look at the problem in two-piecemeal away. We need to buy freezers. We need to buy, we need to find a site to put a vaccine clinic up at. We need to contract and think about all of these different components rather than really thinking about the system as a whole. And I think a lot of that happened early with testing. We saw companies that literally went and bought hundreds of thousands of test kits from China, thinking that that was the solution to being able to provide testing to their employees and ensure that their essential workforces were safe. I think that's one aspect of it, is sort of the system versus the components. The other part that we're seeing kind of, again, that I think we're doing a lot better with this time is really focusing on sort of equity and community access right out of the gate. There's so much, higher prevalence in certain communities and areas and geographies. And really building from the outset a system that makes it so that it's very easy for people to be vaccinated where they are in their communities, and really mobilizing capacity in those communities and helping, local clinicians be able to just do this very easily and very efficiently. I think those are the types of things. I think, I don't know that having everybody come to a health system, to their traditional clinic, in a waiting room is going to be the solution for getting the scale of population that we need vaccinated.
Yeah,
I think it really is about pushing into communities.
That's an interesting point, right? Because first of all, we have a lot of people who don't have a regular health provider, don't have a health system behind them. What was the experience with Color? You partnered with local health departments, with employers. So what did you learn through the experience of running tests with various partners?
Yeah, we've been working with, whether it's local health departments or the state out here in California, with the California Public Health Department, Department of Public Health in Massachusetts, major employers that are in, all kinds of jurisdictions across the country. It's really about two things, I think, in our experience. One is making it extremely simple for people to sign up for a test or a vaccine. So, for instance, one of the very early design decisions that we made is we weren't going to require accounts to be created. You don't have to make a password to be able to access a test. Very simple sign up. Only a mobile phone number is required, right, for digital literacy and language literacy issues. The second, I think, is on for the institutions that support this, whether it is public health departments or employers or universities or schools, just really like reducing the amount of overhead on them. So for instance, our work with California for public school districts across the state, and with the California Department of Public Health, you know, kids are showing up. All that, you know, schools need to do is basically like fill out a sign-up form. We're shipping out kits that are pre-assembled. We're taking off all of the burden of registration, all of the reporting burden. And we send also even things like the ship back materials with it so that the samples can be transported very easily to the lab. So just really reducing the amount of overhead on all the individuals and communities who are actually administering these programs.
As we've gotten deeper into this, is the process more efficient? Can machines run tests any faster? Are sample collecting protocols any more efficient and so on?
That's a really interesting question. I think that there have been so many cycles over the past year of thinking that a new testing technology is the silver bullet. There were the antigen tests, there were at-home, you know, kits, there were the new antigen machines where it was, you know, 15 minutes to a response. But in reality, none of those things have really completely changed the dynamic of testing. The vast majority of it still today is through, you know, a centralized lab model, much like ours. And it's really interesting because I think there have been some developments on the testing side that are very important, but we when you look back at these promises, I think that the scale of them really hasn't had the impact that people thought because of exactly what I've been talking about. Like the logistics of them actually are sometimes more difficult. Like swabbing somebody, reading a card out at 15 minutes later is actually more difficult often than just being able to take a swab and put it in a box and ship it out, if that makes sense. So I think those have been some of the things that we've learned over the past year.
Okay. Well, let's get to questions. We have quite a few lined up now from our listeners. Remind you, if something comes to mind, please send us a question via email at askus@kcbsradio.com. Our guest today is Caroline Civello, who's Chief Commercial Officer for Color, the Bay Area company, a health company that's running many COVID-19 test sites. Let me start with this one. There's still frustration out there, Caroline, from people like this. I'm an essential worker. My company's asked us to get tested at one of the San Francisco city sites every week or two. Last summer, that wasn't a problem. I've been trying off and on to get an appointment since Thanksgiving. Every time I log in, it tells me there are appointments available, but then I enter the information and it shows nothing. Any suggestions?
Yeah, I completely understand that that's been a challenge for a lot of people. So the testing availability in San Francisco is the capacity is set and determined by the Department of Public Health. We work very closely with them on that. One of the changes that occurred recently is, and one of the kind of really important focuses of the city has been to increase access in community settings that have had really high prevalence rates. And so we've been actually shifting a lot of capacity in the city towards pop-up clinics in certain neighborhoods, as well as to the new testing site at the Alamany Farmers Market. And those actually also have been very explicitly designed to really be focusing on individuals who have symptoms or who have contact exposure events. So the Alamany Farmers Market actually is transitioning to a model where there are no pre-booked appointments, and it's only day of individuals that are showing up. And so that's part of the reason that appointment availability may seem more scarce in the city of San Francisco right now.
Okay. Next one. Can you really detect and isolate people before they infect others? If so, why aren't we testing more? What would it take, for example, to increase PCR testing by a factor of 10 or 20?
That's a really good question. It is very possible to identify individuals before they're infectious, but carry, you know, fragments of viral RNA, either at the beginning of the course of infection or at the end of the course of infection. I think the roadblocks to this really, and I think I may have mentioned this actually the last time we were speaking, Stan, but it's not actually lab capacity. The challenge is all of the mechanics of like sample collection and how you make that super simple. Like for instance, we have been working with some populations where they're doing 3 times a week testing for huge populations of people. And we basically are distributing these unmonitored test kits where they're able to swab themselves, register a barcode on their phone and drop it off in a secure collection bin. With the state of California, we're helping, you know, ramp up school testing access in schools for teachers, staff and students. And I think like that, it for us, it really is much, what we've seen is just it's much less about PCR capacity that's available in the country, and much more about like a very simple model for getting high number of people to collect a sample in an easy and cost-effective way.
Okay. We're starting to get these kind of questions around vaccines and testing. This is a simple one. Should I still get tested if I get vaccinated?
That is a good question. I think that there's interesting, you know, policy guidance that probably will be shifting on this. And, you know, as always, like we always say, you know, refer to CDC and local public health guidelines on these types of questions. We have a number of institutions that we work with who have been providing regular testing to their employees, many of whom also have started vaccinating. They're continuing to provide testing, I think in part to understand and ensure that individuals who have not been vaccinated or the family members of individuals who have been vaccinated, that there still is not infectiousness potentially or somebody who's carrying the virus. So I think local public health and CDC guidelines are the place to look, but I think that this will continue to evolve.
Okay. Next one. Can your test tell the difference in the virus mutations or only that you have one of the coronavirus mutations?
Yeah, great question as well. We're hearing a lot about this these days. So the way that Color's lab and testing works is it effectively just identifies that there is the presence of the COVID-19 viral RNA in somebody's, you know, system. The specific strain of that virus, of that RNA, is not something that is determined when we are identifying that somebody has that viral RNA in their system. To identify the specific strain actually requires a separate technology be run on the sample, which is sequencing, which is basically mapping exactly what that viral RNA strand looks like, rather than just that it exists or it doesn't exist. There's some institutions that are out there doing some sequencing after samples have been collected and after we identify positive samples. There are big state efforts on this. There are local efforts on this with San Francisco and UCSF. But we identify that you do or do not actually have the presence of the viral RNA in your stream, but not the specific strain.
Got it. Now, is there enough sample material left over? Or is it preserved so that if your test flags a positive result, that can then be handed off to those who are doing the strain sequencing?
It's another good question. So I think one aspect of this that we're always very upfront about is consent for how people's samples are used. We're very, very transparent about what's happening with the information, and we try to be very upfront about that, given, you know, a lot of history and legacy around inappropriate use of samples and material from individuals. Our standard practice in the lab we're high throughput. We're processing tens of thousands of samples a day. Our process is to destroy those samples after they've been run. So we don't preserve them in any way to be, you know, running this sequencing on them. There are specific research collaborations that we may support where people reach out and ask that question, but we haven't been doing that. And we always are very upfront with individuals about whether or not their sample will be used
okay.
in that way.
Next question, kind of maybe in a similar vein, wants to know if and when someone does test positive, then what? Well, how difficult is the process of contacting the individual, contact tracing? I mean, I know having taken a color test and getting a negative result months ago, I simply got a text message, I think it was, saying mm-hmm. negative result. And I believe my healthcare provider, who I'd identified up front, was probably notified of that. I'm pretty sure he was, because mm-hmm. next time I talked to him, he said, oh, I see you're clean. But what happens when somebody tests positive?
Yeah. So the process that we notify people is very similar. Regardless of your result, when you are tested through color, you receive a text message notifying you that your results are ready. You authenticate in with the barcode card that you received, you view your results. And as you mentioned, if you've provided us with information about your primary care physician or another doctor, we take care of actually getting the result to that doctor of yours. If you test positive, what we're doing is we're reporting all results to the to California, to the state's reporting system, which is called CalReady. CalReady and the data that exists there then feeds back to the counties. Each county has a contact tracing and case investigation team that is actually supporting follow-ups to individuals who test positive. So that's the way that the basically for positive cases, you would likely receive an outreach from the contact tracing teams and support teams in any county in which you reside, And they would actually help with follow-ups and giving you information and kind of supporting through the process of having infection.
Okay. Next question. Several teachers in my family, a big part of what they say would make them feel safe about going back to in-person instruction would be regular testing. But my question is that feasible or even possible for all this number of people?
So this is so important, I think, to especially out here in California, to kind of getting things restarted. And actually, we have been working very closely with the California Department of Public Health over the past many weeks to stand up a full testing program available to any school district in the state. We have many hundreds of schools that are already starting testing through this program. It is feasible. They are basically, as I mentioned earlier, receiving test kits, receiving basic software access, receiving training from Keller, and then are able to actually begin testing very regularly for staff, teachers, and now for students as well. And the governor has also proposed a very significant budget package to support and help fund a lot of these testing efforts. So I think there's going to be a lot more movement on this in the coming weeks, but the program is already underway.
Okay. Next question. Could you discuss the relative pros and cons as well as the likely use cases for PCR tests versus antigen tests, particularly this rapid test the Biden administration is spending money on? I think they're probably talking about the Illum test, which we heard about earlier this week.
Yeah. So I don't know too much about that test in particular. I think that the use case is, so where we've seen, antigen testing, like a lot of folks have heard probably of the Abbott Binax Now AG card. It's like a little card with a QR code on it. We've seen a lot of that use case in situations where it's difficult to have shipping to a centralized lab. So that's one place that's been, I think, very useful. The other is we see it as almost like a complement to PCR testing rather than a complete replacement of it, I think, because of the workflow issues and how much time it will take to actually, if you want to test 1,000 people, you have to read every one of those cards. You have to read it within a specific 15-minute window. A clinician needs to record the result. It's a lot more effort to basically do and test a large group of people with that technology. But I think that it's kind of a complement to in a sort of routine screening program. And I'm not sure as much about the other testing that you mentioned that the Biden administration is focusing on, but I imagine it'll be similar.
All right. There's a question or a couple of questions here actually about pricing, cost, who's paying. This person writes, how can an individual get a color test in Santa Clara County? Testing is hard to access in the North County, and testing for individuals is very expensive. Here's another question saying, why is it so expensive? It seems to be a lot of confusion, and maybe there's not much unanimity in the way this is handled out at the point of where the tests are being done.
So all of the work that Color supports with public health departments for these public testing sites, it is all free to individuals, and it is funded by the local departments of public health and by payers. So we are beginning the process of trying to help these counties and these states get reimbursement from the insurers for testing that is medically necessary. So that's the funding sources for our work on the public health side. We actually don't provide testing to individuals directly. Everything that we do is in partnership with an institution, a public health department, an employer. But I think that like there are a lot of these. I've been seeing a lot of pop-up type testing sites where people are offering testing for $125 or something like that if you want to pay out of pocket. We just don't provide that kind of a service, and our testing wouldn't be that expensive either. Most of this is being funded by public health budgets and payers.
Okay. This question here wants to know, somebody pays a lot of attention here, how close to widespread adoption are some of these CRISPR-based instant tests? So this is a sort of more advanced, slightly different take on looking for the virus.
Another very interesting question. So the CRISPR technology is it's another type of testing technology. Examples of this are Mammoth Biosciences, Sherlock system. And there's a lot of this effort, obviously, out of UC Berkeley as well. I'm actually not so familiar with that being widespread today in terms of the technology that people are using to be doing widespread scaled testing. I haven't seen that I know that there is some of this testing happening, but not at the scale of the more traditional and sort of scaled PCR and send out lab models.
All right. Well, listen, we've run out of time. And as always, thank you for donating some of yours. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Dan. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Be safe. That's Carolyn Civello. She's the chief commercial officer at Color, the Bay Area health company running many COVID-19 test sites in the Bay Area.